From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 16th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Taxman Long.
Taxman?
Yeah, well, it would have been tax day yesterday. Yeah. Well, now it's extended for, 18 months, I guess. So, but I always remember, like, it's funny the date, like, everybody knows April 15th, right? I mean, you might forget your wife's birthday, your anniversary, but you don't forget April 15th is tax day.
No.
Until it's not tax day.
I always think the Ides of March, March 15th, I was, for some reason, I always mix those two up. I don't know why, but.
Well, it's good. You get your taxes in on early.
Get in early, right?
Yeah.
Right. Unless my business partner doesn't give me our forms, then I can't do it.
I always remember, like, one of the newspapers I worked at, we put the wrong address for a post office that was open late on tax day, which always sucks. You always feel bad when you make a mistake like that, right?
Yeah.
This guy called the next day, just shredding me on the phone. He's like, because your newspaper, my taxes are late. I went to that post office and it was closed, so I didn't get my postmark. And I'm like, I want to say, I hold back everything I could because I was just like, little assistant news editor there. I wasn't a big guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And just say, you had 4 months to do that, right? I definitely get that the address was wrong. My bad. I feel bad about that. But let's go ahead and both accept responsibility on this one. All right, thanks.
Hey, what do you do in that case? Do you run a correction that's worthless?
Right.
Next year, don't go to this address.
Didn't if you went there last night. Our bad. Your taxes are late.
So. We're sorry. Don't sue us.
Next year, start earlier. All right, so it's turning to the poker portion of the show. Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management has partnered with Poker Power, and that's spelled P-O-W-H-E-R, a female-led company that teaches poker strategy to women, on a pilot program to teach female students how to apply poker strategy to business decisions. Each week, students have lectures and small group discussions, followed by a poker lesson to tie it all together.
This just in, too. I hear that Jose Canseco is applying to take that program.
Oh, man. I wonder if Tony the Tiger is going to be his instructor.
Can anyone, like, I'm hoping that there's still enough fans out there that was long enough to get that joke. I don't know. But this is interesting. Very interesting. I mean, supposing it's to toughen them up or somehow or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Or so what to expect, kind of thing.
Yeah, so the article kind of explained how they realized that the same skills or the same concern, reasons that – they back up. The same reasons there are fewer women willing to play poker is the same – some of the same reasons that fewer women are making it up to, shattering that glass ceiling in the business world. So if they can get them comfortable playing poker – then the thought in this program is that they'll apply those skills and, be better in the boardroom, right?
So right. You can strike these guys down at the poker table. You can strike them down at the board table, right? That's
exactly. Exactly.
All right, good. Very cool. I like that.
Pretty interesting. So we'll see. It started, I think it starts this week and goes for 4 or 5 weeks, the first one. So it'll be interesting to see if there's a follow-up mid-May with some of the students and whether they thought that was great. But I'm going to imagine class participation is a lot higher when you get to play a game of poker at the end of class rather than
absolutely
like an exam.
I wonder if it's one of the – it's a short program, too. I wonder if they're longer classes, like, because poker games, you can't tell how long they're going to last. You know what I mean? So I wonder if it's one of those long, all-day classes.
Right, so maybe it's just bluffing was one day and not really a sit-and-go.
Gotcha.
I would imagine the students would want to get together, like, on weekends and – play a game, right? I would think that's what I would do. But
so the whole Title IX thing, does this mean that you have to have classes for guys too doing poker and stuff? I'm curious.
We just bring back men's gymnastics. We're fine.
Okay, so. Good. Very good.
not that this is news to any of us, but it's always great for a game when someone new to it realizes what we know and then shares that idea through major media. Sopan Depp, writing for the New York Times, penned a column talking about how a friend invited him to a Zoom poker game early in the pandemic, and the group bonded over poker, a game that Deeb says is a game, quote, built inherently on mistrust.
Now, how do you know this person's a guy?
Did I say a guy?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know from that name, and the last name is D-E-B, Deb. Maybe they did it right, last name first.
Deb, and then, I did say him. I did, all right.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, could be her. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I have no idea. The last name's Deb, you know, that's a woman's name, so who knows?
But
it's true. It's always, I mean, that's why the boom happened, was because people were led into a world that they didn't know existed and were thrilled and enthralled by it, by watching what happens at these tables. And they're just unbelievable that they couldn't believe that this is how you play poker and it's this simple or it's this exciting. So when they finally got to see it on a broad, you know, in mass or whatever, then that's why the poker boom happened. Same here. I mean, now you introduce somebody to poker and they're like, oh, wow, this is great, you know. And then, of course, I love that line, built inherently on mistrust. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, so here's I got a lot to say about this. So let's start with that, though, because that's my only nitpick. The rest is awesome. I think there's a lot of great things that come out of this article. But is the game built inherently on mistrust, or is that a common misconception about people who haven't played it before?
Well,
because I would say if you were talking to people who never played poker, what their version of their vision of poker based on TVs, movies, people talking to them, is that poker players bluff and lie and steal your money, right? Now that all that stuff happens in poker, but I think we also would be able to explain poker as a strategic game, right? So that bluff is not a mistrust necessarily. It's just an effective strategy.
Oh, I'm so glad you said
that. How's that?
All right, so let's break this down. Every single thing you do when cards are in front of you is meant to make the other person think the opposite of what you want them to think. Like, in other words, what do you want them to do? So every time you bet, you're hoping they don't believe you if you want to call. Every time you bet, you hope they do believe you when you don't want to call. Every single thing you do when they bet, you're trying to see if they're lying to you or if they're not, or if you believe your hand is better than what they're conveying. I understand what that line means. I don't think it's just the bluff. I think it's entirely on, I'm only calling you now because I believe my hand's better than you are trying to convey, or I'm only betting this much because I'm trying to make you think that my hand is good, even though I know it sucks. So I do think that there is a lot of truth in that statement, which is ironic because it's about mistrust. But
I don't trust you with your opinion.
But I don't believe it's just tied to the bluff. I think everything we do at a poker table is to mislead the other people in a way that benefits us, whether it's telling the truth and getting them to fold or call, you know, whatever it is that you're doing. I believe this is absolutely 100% our intent is to make them do whatever it is we need them to do to win the pot. And almost every time you're doing it, you're lying in some way, you know, you're doing something to make them act differently than they want to act to succeed.
Excellent. Very good point. I will quote the judge from My Cousin Vinny.
Utes? Did I say Utes? I don't remember saying Utes.
Very elegant argument denied. All right, so... So, all right. So, a very elegant argument. That's fine. So, here's my question. How is that different than baseball, where a pitcher is trying to get a batter to swing at a fastball when he's expecting an off-speed pitch, right? Or how is that different in football when the defensive coordinator is trying to give a look and the offensive coordinator on their side is trying to figure out, you know, what kind of look they're going to get? It's all the same stuff, right? You're all trying to get somebody to believe a different story.
Except that in football...
So why is it poker that is the one listed as based on... No one would say baseball or football is a game built inherently on mistrust, but it's the same concepts.
Well, except that in football and in baseball, the ball isn't the size of a quarter that you can stuff in someone's pocket that you don't know whose pocket has it, and then you know who's pitching it or throwing it. I mean, it's still, hey, you still can see all of us. You can still see what we're doing. If you can't stop us, that's your problem. I can't see your cards in poker, so I have to guess, and it's all in the mind. football, yeah, you might trick somebody with, you know, a flea flicker, or in baseball, you might throw a knuckleball when they're expecting a fastball, and so they swing ahead of it. But it's still, I got the ball in my hand, and I'm throwing it. You have to determine whether or not that ball's coming at you fast or slow when you see the ball. I don't get to see your cards and go, I wonder if I can beat it straight. No, I don't get to see the cards. There's a different type of secrecy there, that it's unknown information, you know, and when they hike the ball, you get to know the information and still try to act on the play. That's just like when you're betting. If I bet, you know, you don't get to see my cards, but I've acted and you get to watch me bet, whether I'm making a tell or if I'm, you know, betting an amount that's, you know, commensurate with what I have in my hand, whatever that is. When in football, you're seeing these guys running around and you still have to cover all of them. You still have to make the play and you get to see it in front of you. There's no guys coming from off the sideline going, ha ha, I'm really in the game. You didn't get to do it. And they throw the ball to me and I'm down in the end zone. That, it's not like that. There's still rules and there's still complete information in front of you. In poker, there isn't. The cards are face down or in your hand. So I don't buy yours. Denied. Re-denied. Is that a word?
I called yours elegant, though.
Okay. Yours was elegant, but re-denied. Jeez, I didn't think we'd be talking about this long. This is great.
I know, it is. It's a lot more fascinating than it was already fascinating, I thought. Because some of the other things I like, I like when people, when you change somebody's mind, or somebody goes into something and they come out the other side like, wow, I should have been doing that my entire life, but because I had all these misconceptions, I didn't want to do it, right?
Yes.
Like just like food, like, you know, 20 years not eating lobster because you think it's gross, so then you have it, you're like, my God, keep the lobster coming. For whatever reason, right? Or traveling somewhere, oh, I don't want to go there, that's nothing but blah, 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 and then you get there like, whoa! So I always like that. As somebody who generally has a pretty big open mind and is looking to experience things, even if you fall flat on your ass and fail, right? So that's always good to see. And then there's a little bit of sadness in this article too, right? So I mean, one of the big debates I'm having with my friends now, because it's Oscar season, and you know, all of our listeners know that I watch all the Best Picture nominees, and my favorite right now is Nomadland, mm-hmm. which inherently is a sad movie, you know, about this woman who just drives around in a van and, you know, has to take a crap in a bucket in the van and dump it and looks for odd jobs and blah blah blah, right? So. But Laura and I really loved it, and we've sold it to a lot of people, and they come back to you like, I'm not taking your opinion anymore. That was a super sad movie. And so our opinion was that this woman made all of her own choices. They're not choices that we would make, or certainly any of the people that I recommended the movie to would make, but she was in complete control of her life. And this is what she wanted to do. And that's inspiring, I think, to me, right? So, the sadness here is that they bonded over this poker over Zoom because you had no other options, right, back then, right? I mean, it's funny going back to my Facebook memories and just seeing how humorous we were about how miserable we were a year ago, right? Yeah. But you did what you did at that point, you know. I played a trivia with one of our listeners in London every Sunday afternoon for a while, which was a blast, right? So, but then when that ends, you know, there are people that are ready to go back to the whatever the new normal is. And then there's people, I think, that are upset that what we've created in this past year is going away, right?
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of sadness there in that, so I think.
I had all these funny lines, but you just kept talking. Now I can't say them. They're not timely. I was going to make a funny line about the lobster and catching my cholesterol up to the hideous numbers. I mean, I had all this stuff going. I can't make the jokes now. You just kept telling me stuff.
See, I just threw that Nomadland at you and just ruined everything.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Thanks a lot. At least you weren't the one that recommended Magnolia to me back in the early 2000s or whatever. That was a horrible movie.
That was a rough watch, too. Yeah.
Eternal Mind, Spotless, whatever the hell that stupid
movie. Hey, don't be disrespectful. Yeah,
because she's in it, big deal. She was good. The movie sucked. How's that? There, I'll make you feel better.
So actually, I do actually kind of want to hear from our listeners on this, because I want to see whether how they continue to play poker during the pandemic is. Are they going to continue that? Is that option been taken away? Because again, remember, poker is not a singular game, right? So, you know, if it was six buddies that you boomed with, bounded with on Zoom, and five of them say, hey, my poker room's open now, I'm going there, forget about the Zoom thing, you know, you don't have the option to play Zoom then, right? So it would be interesting to see so which of these pandemic transitions traditions will carry on, which will die, and which will transform. That's the next question, right? I mean, would this writer actually prefer the Zoom thing, and is little, it seems like a little hesitant on whether this can be transferred to a live poker environment.
Well, the thing I was, if it were like me, you, Frank, Faso, Gambit, those guys, and we were doing it on Zoom, then I think we'd abandon Zoom and we'd all get together again.
Sure. Yeah.
But if it's me, you, Matt Savage, you know what I mean, all the people that we're friends with around the country, you know, Ben, and we were playing together, then I could see it, like, sticking around because, hey, it was cool getting together with them when we don't have a chance to get on a plane and go to California every other day. But,
right.
So, yeah, so I guess it's all circumstantial. To me, I wouldn't want to have the runner-up prize when I could have the championship ring.
Yep.
So I knew if it was our guys getting together, we would all get together at your house or my house or whatever. So, but, yeah, I wouldn't like to know if the relationships continue once the pandemic is sort of in our rearview mirror and they continue to play on Zoom or not. I wonder what happened to Zoom.
Yeah.
Zoom.
And somebody like this, too, the other interesting thing is one of the things she wrote about was that while playing, they found out that they had other mutual interests, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so the poker is what brought them together, but that doesn't need to be what keeps them together, right? So if the Zoom's going away, the poker game's going away, hey, we just, that was something we just did to get through pandemic. I would hope that these folks would, hey, all right, so you're going to the Rush concert? Well, great, Cassandra stiffed me, so I need to go with someone. Remember to bring $65 for that t-shirt, but and you know, continue those friendships outside of poker with the other mutual interests. That would be pretty fantastic, I think.
Yeah,
I don't see that, would be cool. That shouldn't happen.
Let's hear from them. I want to see what our listeners have to say about that.
All right, Tadas Pekitis.
That sounds like a Pekitis. Something you tell your urologist. That doesn't sound like a baby.
I have Pekitis.
Oh no, you poor wife.
If you're suffering from mild to severe Pekitis, ask your doctor. Tadas is right for you.
Man. I'm not even going to get into the whole four-hour thing either. Let's just keep going with this.
All right, Tadas Pekitis, writing on casino.org. Somewhere out there is mocking me. Good Lord, what a boring name. Anyhow, he's writing on, he or she, writing on casino.org.
That's right.
Listed some of the unique poker memorabilia a serious poker enthusiast might enjoy owning them. Among them, World Series of Poker bracelets, which go for anywhere between a few $1,000 all the way up to six figures. How about signed photos and books, including a Doyle Brunson autographed copy of Super System that could be yours for $500? Or custom poker chip sets made from gold and sapphires.
That's crazy.
And finally, limited edition poker room chips that have been retired.
We know for a fact that Vic G likes that last item.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's you're going to be bidding on Vic G on those things, so maybe you start with one of these other things.
And poker chip sets made from gold and sapphires. That doesn't sound smart. I mean, the chips really should actually be worth more than their face.
They're actually the value on them.
That's just hilarious to me. So what do you think? How are you going to explore this item today? Are you going to come up with something that you would be interested in having? Or?
You know, I was going to put a last line on there that said, you know, if you could own any piece of poker memorabilia, what would you own? But I didn't want to put you on a spot there. So that's where I would have taken it. And I don't know what that really would have been. I mean, I'm a big history buff. You know, I go to museums when I travel. I go to, like, my favorite ones are people's homes that, you know, have been dead for 50 years or 100 years, right? And like, look down at that stuff and like, wow, this famous person sat right there and played with that stuff, right? Or did that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And one of my Facebook memories from today, actually, we had one of our Antioch cruises was in Key West, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I went to the what's called the Little White House down there, where Harry Truman used to vacation. And I had a joke on the Facebook post because you're not allowed to take photos inside because it's an active military base.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to do a selfie outside, you know, because and say, hey, you know, I wanted to take a photo of Harry Truman's poker table and cards and chips, which were still on the table, right? But yeah. I couldn't see, I had to suffer for this boring selfie outside. So I guess that would be kind of for me. I mean, I think it would be something with a president's, you know, table, probably a table that presidents played poker on.
Isn't there some picture of him like holding the buck or something when they said pass the buck?
Yeah, well, that's what the whole pass the buck means.
It's right, like, and there's a picture of him holding it. Isn't there like a famous, I would want the buck.
Yeah.
I think. But if I'm being honest, if I look at the file here, there's a Doyle Brunon autographed copy of Super System for $500. I think I would want that. Because Scott apparently says there's a Doyle Brunon autograph.
I don't know what you're talking about. It says Doyle Brunson on my computer.
Yeah, it says Brunson now, but it said Brunon. I want to meet Doyle Brunon. See, hey. Oh, he's got the gall to sign a Super System book.
So if Doyle Brunon is getting $500, guess what? Imagine what Doyle's getting for that.
Exactly, exactly. Now I don't know what I'd want.
I do have an autograph book from Doyle Brunson. It's his Godfather of Poker book that he wrote. I got at an event down in the Dominican Republic because he was, a part owner or featured pro or something in the sports book down there. So they're giving away stuff. So I do have that. It's not autographed Super System, which is more impressive, obviously. But. Wow.
I think I'd want the first tie that Sam Minatello ever wore when he was calling the World Series on ESPN. Does that make sense? Does anybody know who Sam Minatello is anymore? I don't know.
Yeah. We do. He's just not on Facebook anymore. So.
He's just gone. But I don't know. That's a good question. Like I mean, being serious though, if I could own something from Wild Bill Hickok, that's
probably man, that's a good one. That'd be insane.
And of course, it would definitely be a Doyle Brunson thing. I mean, I've met Doyle Brunson. I've interviewed him. I've talked to him. I could have gotten his autograph if I wanted to, but it wasn't professional, so I didn't do it. But it's a good question, really. I think that would be it, though. I think Wild Bill Hickok, something back then, you know, that was legitimate, that you could be, you know, guaranteed it was actually the aces and eights he held in his hand or some weird crap.
Which you probably would never know, which is great for collectors because somebody could tell you that. You'd be like, sure, all right, I believe you. And then your friends come to your house and they're like, sure, I believe you. Why am I not going to believe you? So,
other than that, like anything from Binion's that was legitimately there at the first final table or something like that, that you knew was in that moment, whether it was a glass or a napkin or I don't care. You know, just something you knew 100% authenticity was proven to be true or whatever. That'd be kind of something I'd want. But other than that, I really don't know. Maybe a Scott Long bobblehead doll that he slammed on the table when he got particularly mad at me during a meeting. That would be kind of cool. You know, sign it too. Make sure you sign it.
Yeah, because my signature is still legible.
I know. And then we were stupid. We put it in the magazine once. And I'm like, now people can like, you know, they could take your magazine, your thing from the magazine, and forge any document they want with your name on it. And they'll be like, is that your signature, Mr. Long?
No, the one in the magazine is legible, so it's not my real signature.
Is that your signature, Mr. Long? Yes, Your Honor. Okay, well, then you now bought a Lamborghini.
Did you say two Utes? What's a Ute?
You know, how many judges are in references? And wasn't even one from Rounders yet. I mean, how are we making all these judges? I tell you, this is the best show. Pandemic, man. It really brings out the best in us.
Oh, man. All right, so I got to ask this, though. It's the same thing as people buying, like, championship rings from the World Series or Super Bowl, right? I don't have any desire to own somebody else's bracelet.
Yeah, I don't either.
And I'm sure I'm rare in that. I mean, I'm obviously the, you know, basic ones they say are going for a few thousand dollars. That one that Peter Eastgate sold is for like $150,000 for charity. So yeah, there are people out there that want to buy them, but I don't know.
Get it.
I mean, I guess if it was, like one of your favorite players or something. That's no different than what we just talked about, right? With Wild Bill Hickok or, you know, a Harry Truman poker table. I guess that it adds a little bit more. But if it's just some random dude that I don't know and I just want to own a World Series poker bracelet, that I got better things to spend my money on, I think.
Yeah, no, I have no desire to own Lane Flack's stud bracelet from whenever. You know what I mean? I would rather earn it than own it. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I guess, you know, memorabilia collector, that's one thing. You know, if you're like, hey, look at my room full of poker memorabilia, then it's like, and here's my prize, you know, Thurl Brunson World Championship bracelet or something. Then that's something, I guess. Yeah. But I just have no desire to own it, you know. I mean, I'm not a collector anyway. I collect bonsai trees, you know. I mean, I have a couple of things from very famous bonsai artists.
Celebrity bonsai artists.
Yeah, I have like a signed book from John Naka, who was basically responsible for bringing it to this country, you know, the art of bonsai. So, I mean, but I don't own it because he signed it. I own it because it's a good book and I needed it, and he signed every copy of it. So that's that. But I didn't go looking for it to collect it, you know. So I'm not like that. People who are in that mode, I can see them wanting to own the bracelet. But for me, we're the player, so I would rather earn it than own it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting, though. Very good.
All right, here's this week's update on poker room reopenings. Gila River Hotels and Casinos in the Phoenix area of Arizona is moving its poker operations to Lone Buck Casino on April 19th. Its Wild Horse Pass Casino will no longer offer poker, and the poker room at its Viquiva Casino will be closed permanently. A little sad for us because we've had events at both of those two casinos.
Yes.
But at least it's staying on in Gila River at one point. So,
of course, it's Lone Butte, not Butt. I don't know. Lone Butt. I think it's Butte, buddy.
It, you know, just depends on how good your
lone butt.
Lone boot. Okay, sorry. Firekeepers Casino Hotel in Michigan will reopen its poker room on May 1st. We now have 228 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And antiupmagazine.com/reopen list verified details on poker room reopenings. Key unverified. There's a couple other rooms we're hearing that might be opening on Monday, but have not seen verified details on yet. So we'll have more on next week's show, I'm sure.
Very good.
If you have updates, emails at editor@antiupmagazine.com. And those updates include they've changed, you know, how many players at our table or things like that. That's the hardest thing for us to track. So we are behind the eight ball on that.
So. Yeah, we've made some updates to that too recently. So, speaking of updates, Papes, the Anti-Up Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money Site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Anti-Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call-the-floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Anti-Up logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Anti-Up Magazine, Anti-Up PokerCast, or Anti-Up Poker Tour logos. And if you have a hand of the week, a listener spotlight, or a call to floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Anti-Up Fans group on Facebook. Each week we spotlight a listener who emails us podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with call to floor and hand of the week, we send them something cool. This is Vic G. We mentioned him earlier on the show. We haven't been able to talk about him recently because of the whole pandemic, but it's good to have him on the show. He says, since April 2020, my local poker room reduced the maximum number of players per table from 9 to 7 because of COVID-19. Now, a year later, it was rumored that they may never return to 9-handed. And what do you know? Last week it was announced that all poker tables will be 8-handed moving forward. Is this good for the game? And does it favor the house or the players? And if it favors the players, which players? I admit I like the extra elbow room, but playing 7 or 8-handed makes for a much more aggressive game than 9 or 10-handed, as those blinds come around quicker. Playing 7-handed during the pandemic allowed dealers to deal more hands per down, which may have also increased the house rake per table, as well as the dealer's tips. Which players are contributing more to the increased rake and tips? Are poker rooms likely to adopt fewer players per table post-pandemic? What have you noticed in your local poker rooms? Are you in favor of 8 max tables as the new norm?
Well, I guess there's a couple things here. I mean, he is right that shorter handed games, more hands, so more rake dropping, but maybe not more total rake dropping. That's the thing you have to think about, right? So now tips are different because you're going to get dealers are going to get about the same tip regardless, right? But the rake is based on a formula, right? So, you know, if you don't have a lot of action, and the more players you have at the table, the more likely you are to have more action and hit that max rake each hand. That's better than, you know, dropping $1 or $2 rather than 5 or 6 each hand, right? So, so there's a couple things to consider on what's best for the poker room. And there's also some psychology on the dealer's tips as well, too. I'm like, if we are churning out more hands, you know, I can see some players who might those $2 or $3 per hand tippers dropping down to $1 now, right? So that's not even science as well either. I think this is more just a COVID thing rather than a poker decision, right? I mean, I don't really know what the poker thought process is on going from 9 to 8.
I think that's right. I think when you're saying that it's a COVID-related thing, I have to agree. Because for me, I don't see this as the poker rooms being greedy in any way. I don't see it as them trying to help out the dealers in any way. I think it's more of a, hey, look how smoothly things are running, or look at how many times there's not a spill on the table or something, because there's more room. I don't know what it is, but it does seem more comfortable. I don't know if there's any science to back this up, but I would absolutely like to see the numbers on if people actually believe that playing 7 or 8 handed means there's more hands being dealt.
Right.
I mean, have you seen these dealers deal? They are lightning fast. The good ones are. The best ones are. They're incredibly accurate. If you're dealing 7 or 8 people, to deal 2 more cards is literally a split second. Literally a split second. There's no way over the course of a down, which is, what, 20 minutes or so, that they're going to deal more hands.
Well, but it's more that if you have more people in a hand, the longer the hand takes. It's not so much the dealing part of
it. Well, it's not that you have more people. I mean, I guess you could say that it's the time it takes to fold. But really, if people are playing, you know, if it goes from 8 to 9, one more player, is that really one more decision really going to make them any more hands?
I guess what I'm trying to say is that in a 9 or 10 handed game versus a 7 or 8 handed game, you've got a couple other players that could get into the pot. So it's not the action of them making a decision or betting. It's that now you've got 6 people on the flop making a decision, 6 people on the turn making a decision, 6 people on the river making a decision. That stuff all adds up. Versus if you were playing 5 handed from the beginning, obviously, you're never going to have 6 people making a decision, right? So it may be 5, 4, 3, and again, I mean, we talk about, I mean, I'm sure we'll cover this in the hand of the week or O'Malley, because we always do, about driving players out of a pot, right? So, you know, a shorter-handed game, you are more aggressive because you're trying to get people out of the pot, and it's harder to get more people out of the pot when there's more people at the table. So,
no, I agree, and I didn't mean, like, I wasn't being ignorant to the fact that there's more people, it takes more time. I just mean to go from 7 to 8 handed, I don't think you're going to significantly see that many more hands per hour. That means more. I mean, maybe the rake is a little bit of an uptick, maybe. And if it's something that people really are complaining about, then they can go to the timed rake and then see what it's like to be miserable with time rake.
Yeah. You know?
Because then it doesn't matter how many hands are being dealt. It makes no difference other than if you think you have to tip more because you're getting more hands. I don't know, but hey, if I'm winning more pots, I'm glad to tip more, so I don't really care.
Well, even a time break, you can sometimes you can negotiate a dealer gratuity out of that, so you're not even tipping out of the pot at that point. So
So I mean, to me, I don't know. I do think that, yeah, if you were playing 6-handed, I think there's a big difference between 6 and 10-handed. It's almost half. But sure, if you're going from 9 to 8, you know, and very few poker rooms are 10-handed. Very few.
Yeah, and that's, I guess that's the point I was going to bring up. There is some I mean, what the word I'm looking for is, you're going to all these poker TDA meetings. Most of the really good poker tournament directors are insistent that nine-handed is a proper table versus right. 10. I can't say off the top of my head why that is. So, but there is, right? So if that's the case, then there might be a reason why nine is better than eight. That is more definitive than what we're talking about here, right? I don't know. Again, I don't know what that is. I will say what's interesting, and you know, our world championship event at Thunder Valley, and really all the events at Thunder Valley, they do have an Action 8 tournament where everybody's eight-handed. And I didn't really know a tremendous difference in playing that, but there was some difference. I mean, it's like one of those things where you can't put your finger on it. But when you're at the table, you're like, you can feel that it's eight-handed and not nine-handed from the beginning. So, you know, but that's a, I don't want to say a novelty tournament. It's a good tournament, but it's a novelty concept for a tournament. It's not, I don't, there's no science behind it as far as I'm aware of. So,
yeah, I mean, like in the beginning of what Vic wrote, he said from nine to seven. So, okay, so if you're used to playing nine or ten-handed and you go to seven, I can see how that's going to be a bit of a difference in time-wise, and you might see more hands. And so then let's get into the other part now, because I think we've exhausted this. Does it help? He was asking if it helps players more than whatever, but what types of players does it help? Obviously, I think if you're an aggressive player, this helps your game.
Yeah, depends on the type of player you're on.
Yeah, and if you're a type of player that's comfortable for playing from, you know, at a quicker pace or with fewer people at the table, and you're also even, like, you know, if they make the blinds bigger, you know what I mean? Like, if you're playing a 1-3 table versus a 1-2, if you're more comfortable with playing bigger limits, then a 1-3 table is going to favor you because you're used to making that raise to 18, whereas normally people make it to 9 or 10. You know, so there are things that you're used to. It's the same thing here. If you love playing 6 max tables and you're great at it because you're super aggressive and you can get through these tables a lot quicker, then a 7-handed is right in your wheelhouse. You know, so, yeah, I think it would benefit the aggressive players more to reduce it to 7. 8-handed, I think, I don't care how aggressive you are, you've got 7 other players you have to get through and someone's going to look you up. So 7-handed seems a little more to this whole idea that Vic has. If someone goes 7-handed permanently, you're going to have a problem, I think. 8-handed, I don't know. I feel like even though it's only one player, it does feel like it's significant to me.
Yeah. Interesting discussion. I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I don't know that many tables that were 10-handed. I remember in the old days in Florida.
Yeah, they were always 10.
Right, they were always 10. And then even the Silks went 11-handed once for tournaments. Yeah. And that was brutal.
Yeah.
And we were still packed in like sardines. You know, like they got 11 every table and there was still no room like to walk around. You know, it was like, all right, just take out one table or something or whatever. I don't know.
I mean, I guess that's the last thing I'll say here from a business standpoint. I mean, think about that. I don't see a business advantage to 8-handed when you have a wait list, right?
Right.
When you get those players in the game, not that extra player really makes a big difference in the rake, but, you know, you don't want somebody sitting there for half an hour reading Annie Up magazine, not getting in the game, and then getting to the end and going, that was a great magazine, man. I'm so glad I read that, but I'm not playing, so yeah. I'm going to go, right?
Yeah, if they have open tables and they're not starting another A-hand table, then, you know, that's the whole reason to do it, is so you can open another table and make more money. But if you are maxed out and you're still eight-handed, yeah, yep. you should probably make a nine-handed.
Yeah. That's an interesting point, too. Yeah,
very interesting. Hey, you know, we get to complete O'Malley's move today, always my favorite thing. So here comes part one. Refresh our memories. We'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing $1, $3, No Limit Hold'em back at our favorite casino cash game. The action has been pretty steady all night. We bought in for 300, and within the first hour, more than doubled our stack on one hand against two opponents. We ended up turning the nuts with an ace-high flush and faded a flopped set. We have no idea what the other guy was doing with top-top. We sit with 800, the game is eight-handed. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and we're in the plus one with 800 and the ace of hearts, jack of hearts. We make the table standard raise to $10. The MP calls. The hijack calls. The hijack will be the villain here. He is the player who called an all-in on the turn with top-top and lost to our flush. He's not afraid to make big bets on scary cards and likes to drive the action. He rebought for $300 and currently has $425. It's folded to the big blind who calls. There's $40 in the pot and the flop is the jack of clubs, eight of clubs, tray of hearts. The big blind checks and we're going to make a bet here. We bet $25 into the $40 pot, leaving us about $775 behind. The MP folds. The hijack calls, leaving him with $400, and the big blind folds. There's $90 in the pot, and the turn is pretty ugly. The seven of clubs comes down. We decide to check for pot control. The hijack checks as well. With $90 still in the pot, the river is the jack of spades. We lead out for $50. The hijack thinks briefly before raising for half his remaining stack. He bets $200. So, we've got trips with an ace kicker. What's the move?
I think this is one of the classic we improve on the river, but we're drawing dead situations. I don't like this spot, even with how our opponent was described. I'm folding.
I like a call here. I mean, yeah, there's three clubs there, and a boat's possible, but I don't know. Trips with top kicker is tough to fold for 150 when you've got 330 in the middle. I don't think I'm going anywhere. I think I have to call. Okay, here comes part two.
Hello again. If this was any other player here, this would give me more pause. I'm fairly certain we're good here. In fact, there are two rocks in this game that I would fold this to and four other players where I would just call. This is the one opponent that I believe warrants a raise. He is either bluffing or has something worse than us, and evidenced by his call with top-top, he may call with a worse hand. I would be genuinely surprised if we're beat here. We shove. We have a moment of panic when the opponent snap calls and quickly turns over the King of Hearts, Jack of Diamonds. Nice. Was this just a lucky cooler? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying it literally pays to know your opponent's tendencies. I hope to see you on the felt.
I definitely liked O'Malley's justification for this shove, as he says it does pay to know a player's tendencies, so that would have made a bigger difference for me.
I don't know if I could have shoved, no matter how much I know someone's tendency there, but good on him for doing it and getting max value. I mean, I would have just been happy to call there, but he got it all in, so good.
Well, yeah, and we talk about this a lot, right? So, and it's certainly a weakness in my game, where I'm like, I feel like I have the best hand, but I'm not convinced. So I make that call rather than the shove.
Yeah.
And if you think about all the decisions you make in poker, I mean, how many of them are 100%, right? Very few. So you're never going to be completely convinced. But if you feel very strongly that you have the best hand, you really are leaving money on the table by not shoving in that situation. Now, obviously, sometimes you'll be wrong and it'll turn up with a better hand. But if you're really confident in that, really the right thing to do at that point is to shove. So, I don't know how I could have been that confident as he was, but again, I don't know this player. But if he really was that confident, that was really, honestly, the only move at that point.
Yeah, I tried to play the hand in my head to think, you know, was there any indication that this guy had a boat or a flush the way he played it? And if he had a flush, I didn't think he would do that when a boat was possible. So then I thought, well, then he has to have a boat to do this. And I couldn't think of a hand that wouldn't have, done more on the turn, I think, as it got wetter, you know, or whatever. I don't know. I feel like if you had the flush on the turn, you would have bet it, and especially if you didn't have, an ace, you know, you would have wanted to, you know, avoid the four-card flush, and then, avoid the board pairing if somebody had two pair or a set. So I felt like I didn't believe him, but I don't know if I could have shoved either, because there's always, you don't know exactly how people play games, so... for me, I'm impressed with the shove. I couldn't have done it.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And Jerry, I just realized I haven't got you your Advanced Poker Training membership, so I will take care of that after this week. But as we remember, our good friend Jerry Haynes, know why, has sent us 10 hands. We are on... the third of the 10 hands. And I'll tell you what I really like about Jerry, Chris, is every time we're on the show and we're talking about it, and it's really important to him that he doesn't leave any information out or we're not confused. And last week there was a bet size that you asked for, and I'm like, that's not here. Well, I must have missed it. So corrected me, but he didn't just correct me. He went back over the file and made things a little bit more clear for the rest of these hands.
So, oh, sweet, sweet.
So every week it gets a little better. He did that after the first week, too. So
sweet.
Pretty soon, by hand 10, he'll be just reading them on the show.
And yeah, or at least we'll get one right, maybe.
Won't even be here, right? All right, so all these hands are from online, and they play at that PokerNow.club. With people they know, obviously. Stakes are 25 cents, 50 cents. And he says, after the last hand, I'm up some, but still down roughly $150 overall for the session. I have 150 in my stack. And the main villain in this hand, the other gun, has me covered. We are playing six-handed, not eight-handed, like at Vic's Room. So.
Right.
The other gun posts a dollar straddle. And we are next to act under the gun plus one, and we have the queen of spades, nine of diamonds.
Fold. I mean, seriously, why even, you know what I mean, why even play the hand? First of all, you got a straddle there.
Why we played this hand, because I would fold in a minute with this.
I would fold this hand almost in any position, except if it folds all the way to me on the button, maybe I'd do something because it's not playing the cards. But in this case, you got to get through their other four players, and you have a straddle. So you don't even know what he has. And it's queen nine. I mean, we talk about this often, or at least I do. You know, when you read the books and stuff, and they tell you if you're playing shorthanded, you just move down the line as far as what kind of hand you'd open with. But there's no hand that you open with queen nine with that's under the gun plus one. I mean, I don't care, no matter how far down that middle position, you're not opening with queen nine off. You're just not. So I'd let it go and move on, you know, especially if the straddler is one of those guys that, no matter what, he'll raise. Because now you're like, all right, I'm going to call this dollar, or I'm going to make it three or six, and then this guy's going to make it 12, and I'm wasting money with queen nine. So if he's not in the hand, you know, if someone else calls behind you, you're going to be out of position with queen nine. It's just a terrible, terrible hand. It's a two-gapper. It's not suited. This one finds the trash faster than
yeah, you have to widen your range when you're playing six-handed, but not this much, not in this position. So, yeah, easy fold for me. So I'm going to guess that's not what's going to happen here. So, all right, here it says the straddle player loves to build big pots. So, again, I would normally raise or fold here. However, in this case, I chose to limp, although that's probably a mistake, and folding is probably the more optimal play. All right, well, yeah. I definitely agree with the second part. Yeah, I'm not sure about raising here. And what's more worrisome about here is the straddle player says he likes to build big pots. I don't want to build a big pot with this hand, right?
Right, right.
Nope. So that makes the fold even easier for me. All right, we call the button, and both blinds also call, and the straddler checks. Interesting.
Are we five-handed?
Six-handed.
To the flop.
Oh, five. Yeah, five. Yeah, right.
Wow.
Well, I think. Okay. Is anybody folded in this hand? One button, both blinds, four. I call it. No, it's
a cutoff.
All six are in.
All six are in. Holy cow.
Yep.
All right. Well, now it's not too bad to have this hand now. Everyone's in. You got probably the odds to draw, so.
All right. Here it says, when the villain checks his straddle, I'm expecting him to be on the weaker side of his range as he raises pretty wide when he straddles. Okay. Well, interesting, though. $5 in the pot, and the flop is the six of clubs, nine of hearts, deuce of hearts. Both blinds check. The under the gun bets 250, and now it's on us.
Okay, so there's five in the pot. I don't know if there's six-handed. It must have been five-handed, right? I don't think they took a dollar out of that pot, so.
Yeah.
All right, so the flop is pretty good for us as far as we have top pair. Still don't like our kicker. It's a kind of wet board, is that the blinds got to get in for nothing. They could have 3-4, 3-5, or 4-5 or something. So there's a straight possibility. There's two hearts.
Seven, eight.
So there's all kinds of straights and flushes and stuff. So I'm going to be inclined to raise that bet and make sure I'm heads up with this guy. So if we made it 250, I mean, whatever's staring at the table when you're re-raising, if it's 3X, then make it 758. You know, whatever. I know you're down 150, so you might be a little weary of that, but you got to play with the tools you have in front of you. You can't let the past indicate anything. So I'm going to raise it. I mean, I need to raise it. I'm in position with this guy. He'll check on the turn, pot control, and then you know, the river's the river. But in this case, I want to be alone with this guy if I can.
Yeah, this is one of those interesting hands where we were like, folded as quickly as possible pre-flop. Didn't do it. But now the hand's got more interesting, right? Because, you know, we have top pair. Not the best kicker, but it's also hard to believe that there's another 9 out there. I mean, maybe a 9-8, 9-10. But we have those beat, right? So, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine there's a king 9 or an ace 9 out there, right? So, and because there's a straddle too, I mean, I said earlier, the blinds could have 9-6 or 9-deuce, but probably not because you still have to put more money in. So I have to feel like I have the best hand here right now, or at least I want to thin that field and don't want anybody to, that next card is not going to be good for us, I don't think. So if we can get more people out of here, and he also said that he expected the straddler to raise there, so he's on the weaker side of his range. Now he could be one of these that has 9-deuce or 9-6, right? Because he didn't have to put any more money in the pot, but let's find that out now. So.
Well, the other good point you made too is that if this guy's known to be the type of person that would raise his straddle, and people were still willing to put money in, knowing that this guy could raise behind them, then you have to know that they all probably have decent hands, and basically decent hands don't hit these cards. I mean, it could be 6-6, 9-9, deuce, and somebody's got a set. But other than that, I don't know, are you really limping on the button with 7-8 when you know the straddle's probably going to pump it to 6 right. or 7?
Yeah.
So it's probably a good indication that we've hit this the best out of all of them. Of course, you never know. But the fact that they know the straddle likes to raise it up after it gets to him, you know, for them to willingly put money in knowing that could be coming, I just don't see him putting them on 7-8. We'll see.
And I'm less worried about being beat right now. I'm more worried about the possibility of somebody catching up really quickly. So, I mean, if you think about this, you know, like there wasn't a lot of action pre-flop, so I don't think there's an ace-king or ace-queen out there. But, you know, there could be a couple Broadway cards, King Jack, King Queen, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, King Queen would be great for us because we'd hit our two pair. But anyhow, I'm worried about any of those bigger cards coming because if I have two overs to this board, generally you're not going to get out unless the action is really difficult, right? You're going to call and see if you hit one of your cards. So the fact that we have a bet and then we raise now. Now, you got to drive all those hands out. I mean, no one could be in that pot. If we raise a 750, as you suggested, you can't be in this pot unless you have a hard draw, that weird straight draw we're talking about, or somewhat of a made hand now.
Well, you made a really good point, too, which is shocking to me because that's 2 points in...
2 in a row. I'm going to go with the hat trick.
But before you said how the next card will hurt us, because unless it's a queen or a nine, right?
Yep.
No matter what the card is, it hurts us because if it's lower than a 9, it can complete a straight. If it's higher than a 9, it could beat our 9s. If it's a hard, it can, you know what I mean? So no matter what, if it's a 3, a 4, or a 5, it makes a straight possible. If it's a 7 or an 8 or a 10, it makes a straight possible, or a higher card gives a bigger pair. So no matter what card comes next, unless it hits us right in the old Labanza, I mean, we're not happy with that card. So it's best now to try to take control of his hand and maybe even take the pot down.
And even worse, the Queen of Hearts is not a great card for us. I mean, right. it could be a good card for us, but now that flush is on board, so
yeah.
We're even limited on the number of cards that can really make you feel comfortable here. So, all right, let's hope he raises here. Let's see what he says. He says, I could go either way here. I'm sorry. He says, I know the under the gun well enough to know that he's going to lead out on a board like this with most of this range, so I'm not going anywhere with top pair. I could go either way here with a call or a raise. A raise for protection would definitely thin the field, but I choose the call because there are still players left to act who could have big hands, and I don't want to get into a big pot with a one-pair hand. Plus, this player will sometimes double and triple barrel his bluffs to try to find thin value with weak hands, but is also savvy enough to fold those against pressure.
See, and this is information that we could have benefited from going into the hand. I don't like to find out this stuff afterward, because now you got all these things that you could have been using in your determination earlier. But okay, go ahead, Jerry. Get that in the next and hand four.
I really think that there's more danger in allowing the rest of the field to stay in this hand. I think agree. Than the guy who likes to double triple barrel bluff re-raising us because. I feel like we feel like we're confident against him right now, right?
Right, right.
Might not be, but I feel more confident about that. So, I mean, I'm not really as apprehensive about the big pot against this guy. I'm more worried about letting three other people in, and there are two cards to beat us. So,
plus, not only that, if you think about it like this, if we know, like he does, that the straddler is the type of guy that likes to bet hard and bluff at things and all that stuff and whatever, then the guys who check to him, they might know that too, and they're hoping to check raise. So this guy bets 250. If we just call 250, now it gets back to the originals who check the blinds, and they're like, haha, I flopped, you know, two pair here because I was in the blinds. Now I'm going to make it 12 to go. You've lost 250 for no reason. And you won't get this because you're not going to stick around for somebody making it 1250. And if you do, you know you're behind. No one's doing that with worse than queen nine, you know, king nine. So, I don't like that at all. I want to raise it now and find out at my own, you know, if I make it 7 to go and then the blinds wake up, make it 30 to go. Okay, I saved 7. But, you know, I mean, to me, it's like I want to end this hand now and find out what everybody has rather than just letting everybody else in or wasting 250 because someone's going to come behind me. And, you know, so either I fold or I raise here. I don't call.
Absolutely agree. All right. Our hero does call, as you said, and everybody else folds. So we're heads up now. $10 in the pot. The turn is the 7 of spades. So our board now is 6 of clubs, 9 of hearts, deuce of hearts, 7 of spades, and our opponent bets $5.
Well, now we're heads up, and we're in position, so I don't mind a call here. It's still just 9s with a queen kicker, so I'm not going to raise it now because we've got the isolation we wanted, and we know this guy can 3-barrel things. So, I mean, yeah, does he have 8-10? Does he have 8-5?
So the 7 actually turned out to be one of those cards that really didn't bother us, because you're right on that. I'm like, it's really hard to imagine this guy has those two hands, so he didn't improve. I mean, now if he's on 9-7, yeah, sure. Can't be too scared about that, so.
Yeah, if he has 8-10, you know, I mean, I guess he would probably still bet there. He might check to you, though, in that moment, you know. So I think we might still be ahead right now.
And this is really the kind of the problem we had by not raising on the flop, right? Because he's not scared of us now because we just called. So he's going to continue to bet until we fold, right? So had we raised there, and let's say he called just because he seems like he might do that, he would have checked here probably, and maybe we could have checked behind or bet. I probably would have bet ourselves. So, we left him in control of his hand, so we don't really know what's going on here. So I feel like I got a raise here now that we didn't raise last time.
Well,
you don't think so?
I don't know. Well, I see what you're saying, because then maybe he'll check the river and we can check behind and control it that way. But, you know, and it's also the case where we make it 15 and he shoves.
True.
Now we're sitting there with 9s, whereas I get to see the river for $5. And now, by me calling twice, he's going to be really, really, it's going to be hard for him to bet 3-barrel unless he actually has a huge made hand at the end.
Well, I guess here's the genius in calling is if a heart comes, now we can represent that flush, right? Mm-hmm. Because he'd go back in the way we played it. We were really passive. We were just calling the bets, and then the flush gets there. But to make that work, one, the flush would have to get there, and we'd have to bet enough money that he's not going to look us up, right? So I don't know if that's enough of a reason for me to call here. I mean, we obviously don't know what he has. We haven't been able to define his hand much, so... and again, he didn't have to put any money in preflop, which I always keep reminding or remembering. So, so he really could have any two cards here. So, you know, a two pair, speed here. So
I think in your Midwestern blue collar workaday mind, you kind of gave me a compliment and called me a genius there, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I'll have to go back and re-listen to that segment.
All right, so our hero says the turn card completes a couple of draws, but against this villain, I'm still not going away with top pair here. With that said, a call seems much better than a raise, so I can keep his bluffs and weak pairs in. I know there may be times I will get drawn out in the river, but I'm willing to take that chance.
See, right, you called Jerry a genius, too.
Yep. Fair enough. All right, so we call with $20 in the pot. The river is the ace of clubs, and the final board is six of clubs, nine of hearts, deuce of hearts, seven of spades, ace of clubs, and our opponent checks.
Check behind.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so there's no way you can win. You have to bet. I don't think that's the case. I mean, if he has the ace, you're not going to bet and get him to fold. There's no reason to bet here. I can't see any reason to bet here other than if he has king nine and get him to fold. And that's not – I just don't see that happening, so – I'm checking behind.
Yeah. I think you're right. King nine. That's, you know, wow. Yeah. Other than that, I'm like, we have showdown value here. I mean, why reopen the betting and be put to a test with a guy that they've been described as likes to play those big pots, right? So I can clearly see that this is one of his arrows in his quiver here. Like, hey, I'll check here. Give my opponent, make them a little overconfident. They'll bet, and then bam!
Bam!
Right? So, yeah, I am really, really excited that we took this crap hand that we would have folded quickly and had made it to the river and might actually win this pot.
Who's the chef that says bam? What was his name?
Emerald Lagasse.
Emerald, that's it. Yeah, we're playing poker with Emerald.
I don't think he's done anything bad yet. Some of the
yeah, I know. I was going to ask you that. I'm like, where did he go? Did he do something wrong? I can't remember.
All right. See, our hero says villain is certainly capable of setting a trap here. If a hand like ace deuce or ace six just made two pair, he also knows I'm capable of betting for a thin value with a hand like mine if he has now made top pair. So I decided just to check behind.
Yay.
He turns over the four of clubs, five of clubs, and I win a nice pot with second pair. Wow.
Yeah, so we said it was possible that 4-5 could be out there. That's why he only checked the straddle and didn't, you know, go crazy with it. That's what I'm saying. You know, he had any 3 or any 8 on the river to win. You know what I mean? That's brutal.
Yeah.
This is why, one, I don't enter queen 9. And two, if I do going to play, if I'm going to play a hand, I want to, you know, screw the straddle or somehow. And it was very difficult to do that by him checking behind. You know, there's no way for you to screw him now. So, you know, yeah. Wow. 4-5. So he had, eight outs? Wow. Yeah. Well, I like the check behind, though, because you bet he's not going to call anyway. So the check behind
is clean. I mean, if you want to be result-oriented, we weren't going to get any more out of him. I mean, the only thing he could have done at that point, his only way of winning that pot, if we bet there, is to shove on us or make a big bet. Shove is probably too much, but make a big bet and get us to fold, which would have worked, I think, right? I mean, if we had bet there and he raised us, this is exactly why we said not to bet, right?
Right.
He could have got us out of this pot. So really, the check behind, now knowing the cards, and even not knowing the cards, was the best move, I think.
Very good. All right, Jerry, that's 30% of your hands. You're not supposed to play more than 30% of your hands, so I guess there's no more hands of the week after this. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.